John chapter 10 has one of those spots in the Gospel of John where Jesus explains who he is in poetic terms. In that passage, if you don't need to go there necessarily, I'm just going to read one verse of that in a moment, and you know the verse, but in that passage, Jesus refers to himself as the great shepherd, the good shepherd, but he also identifies himself as the door. And that combination of those two things give us this visual of a first century Palestine, Holy Land, as some of us would call it these days, how a shepherd functioned. And as he would get his sheep into the corral, for lack of a better term, he would lay across the door. And so the sheep, not only could the sheep not get out without waking him up in the middle of the night, no predators could come in without waking him up in the middle of the night. And so Jesus combines those two pictures as he explains to his disciples, and by extension explains to us today, who he is and the nature of his work for us. And that's in that context is where we get the verse that I so often quote out of John chapter 10. It's John chapter 10, verse 10, with the backdrop of a shepherd who is providing for security and all other things for his sheep. Jesus says this, "The thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy, but I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." My question to you, especially with the song that we just sang, what is it about God that amazes you? If you had to give some kind of a testimony to somebody who knows nothing about Jesus Christ, what would you tell them about how he amazes you? Let me reframe that in light of John chapter 10, verse 10. In that verse, Jesus says, "I have come that you could have life abundant." So how do you get there? First of all, are you enjoying that kind of life today? If you had to give testimony of just how abundant the life that Jesus gives you is, how would you describe that? We come to a passage in James now. Now you can turn to this one, James chapter 4. We'll be in verse 7 and following in a minute. James has been leaning heavily on this argument against, as he has identified problems inside the church and this worldliness that has come in, this self-dependent, self-elevating kind of mindset that comes from the outside world and from that life, that core root of sin in us, and it comes into the church and it begins to cause factions and divisions and even wars, he says, inside the church. James now in verse 7 is going to turn the corner, and he's going to begin now to give us some tactics on how to have the kind of life that we just read about in John chapter 10, verse 10. Speaking of tactics, I want to take you back all the way to 1994. I was in my final position, in my final summer as a youth minister. I did not know that that's what it was, but as it turns out, by the time the next summer came around, I had relocated out of Hobbs, New Mexico, and was taking up a different role in church service. And so on that summer, we had done a number of things, mission trips and service projects around in the town of Hobbs, New Mexico, and just a number of things. And so we had what we called a payoff trip to those students who were actively engaged all summer long. And so we went to Dallas-Fort Worth. Now, Dallas-Fort Worth for some of us is like, yeah, okay, I probably could go somewhere else. But if you're from Hobbs, New Mexico, Dallas-Fort Worth is like Mecca. I mean, it's like the place to go. And so we went out and were treated with having tickets to the baseball game with the Texas Rangers when Kenny Rogers pitched a perfect game. It was a great trip. And part of that trip on the way home, I gave the option to kids. I said, so if any of you want to do a paintball afternoon, then we'll do that. But if you don't want to do paintball, which I knew Teresa, my wife, was not going to want to do paintball, I said, so those of you who don't want to do that, you can go to the mall with Teresa and y'all can shop. And so about four girls went with Teresa, and the rest of us went, about 10 or 15, the rest of us went to play paintball outside of Abilene, Texas. Now, I don't know how much you've worked with teenagers, But the ones that I worked with were hyper competitive. And so as we're making our way over there, the teenagers that were there, there was just two of us who were sponsors for that group. One of the guy's name was Dale and me. Now, Dale was an interesting guy. He was a motorcycle guy. Like, I mean, like really genuinely came out of motorcycle club culture. And his wife was a physician's assistant, and she had come along and got it, changed Dale's life. And so as we're driving over, these teenagers challenged Dale and me to an afternoon of competition. 10 of them against me and Dale. And I was driving and I was thinking, that sounds like a bad deal to me. I don't know if you've done paintball or not, but those things can hurt or not, but those things can hurt. And so I was thinking through that going, how do I get out of this without looking like a wimp? And I hear Dale go, it's on. You betcha we'll do that. We're gonna slaughter y'all. And I was up there going, no, man, no. So we get there, and the guy who's running the place gives us the assignment. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play a series of war games here. And so what we're going to do is we'll do this one first, and then y'all will switch teams up, and you know, and then we'll do another one. And the kid said, no. It's the whole day is us against Mark and Dale. And I'm thinking, I don't know. And the guy finished his instruction. Dale said, I need 5 minutes before we start. And so the guy said, okay, that's fine. And so the 10 went off and did their thing and, you know, kind of hid out there. That's when I found out that Dale was a combat veteran from Vietnam. And he said, in 3 minutes, he told me how we were going to annihilate these kids in this competition. And I said, I don't know if that'll work or not. He said, you need to trust me. He said, I'll promise you it'll work. I said, okay. And so we started playing, and it worked like a charm. We beat those kids in every one of those games, and about half the time they had allotted for us to do it. Tactics are important when it comes to warfare. You can be outnumbered. You can be outgunned. If you have the right tactics and the right mindset, you can get there. James chapter 4, beginning in verse 7, James now turns the conversation. I know that many of us, most of us, perhaps all of us, are really glad that James is not just leaning in a little bit more on how selfish and worldly we can be inside the church. Now he begins to lay out, as a matter of fact, in about 4 verses, he gives 10 imperatives, commands, that prove to be tactics for us in achieving that life that Jesus Christ has offered to us. How do you get to this abundant life that he talks about in chapter 10? What does that even look like? James gives us 10 statements. Today, we're going to do one of those. Next week, we'll do 9. In the same amount of time, okay? I purposely wanted to dig in on this one today because it sets the tone for all the other ones, and it will take you to a different place in your spiritual growth and development, no matter where you are. James chapter 4, we're going to read verses 7 through 10 to get all of those in there, but we're going to focus in verse 7, and here's what James says there. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be wretched and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will exalt you. Tactical Christian living moves you into and through the maturing process as a Christian. So let's go back to verse 7 where we'll dig in some. And the first thing that we need to note there is that this is a transition, and I've already laid it out that way for you, but the way we know that's true is James here in verse 7 uses the word therefore. It is a summary kind of word, essentially summarizing what he has taught and why he taught it, and then the implications of that. He says, submit yourself therefore, that's based on chapter 3, verse 13, all the way through chapter 4, verse 6, where he's been having this discussion about the impact of worldliness and sinfulness in the life of a church when it infiltrates one person at a time. What does submit yourself look like? There are two options here, according to the word submit as James uses it. The first one is the one that I think we usually go to. Especially when it comes to the Christian life, the word submit often is taken to mean for us a surrender at the end of a battle or at the end of a struggle. To surrender, to submit means, okay, I give up. Here's an example of that. A number of years ago, my brother, who's 2 years older than I am, he's a black belt in karate now, but he's also was right out of high school after he'd already gotten kicked out of college. At a state judo meet, he became the Texas state heavyweight champion. Now, that's not like in some sanctioned big, but it was this local thing and people from all over the state, and he won the heavyweight division of that. So I knew that this guy was building himself into a problem when I walked up on a conversation between him and another guy in our church. And this other guy, who also was a judo guy, was saying to my brother, I'm pretty sure I could take you. Now, if you know my brother, you know, unless you just really want to fight, you don't say, pretty sure I could take you. And so I stood there and I watched. I thought, this is going to be good. I didn't even have to buy a ticket for this. I just get to watch. And so it escalated, right? So this guy, I'm pretty sure I could take you. You know, this guy was, I don't know, he might have weighed 75 pounds if he just got out of the river or something. But he was small, probably quick, but not very smart, as it turns out, because he just kept elevating and escalating this conversation. And so finally, my brother, the guy said to him, you know, if you think you want to take me on, he said, let's do it. And just like that, I kid you not, it was not 2 seconds. And my brother had that guy down on the floor in a submission hold from behind, had his arm around his neck. And as he was holding him like that, the guy's just looking up. And I heard my brother say, every breath gets just a little shorter, doesn't it? And as soon as he said that, the guy started doing like this. You know what that means in judo? That means I give up. He's tapping out because he had met his match. That's the picture of this word that we sometimes interpret as just a surrender at the end of some kind of a struggle. And I would suggest to you that the chances are good that somebody in this room today is in a life and death struggle with God. Maybe more than one somebody. But the truth of the matter is that all of us have that capacity because of our sin nature to have the struggle with God that essentially says, I think I can take you. Now, in our right minds, we would never say that about God. In our religious, and that's kind of a neutral term, the way I'm using it right now, but in our religious sensibilities, we probably would never really feel comfortable saying to God, I think I could take you. But the way we behave in our lives often leaves us in this struggle with God that says, I got this, you step back. If that's you today, you came to church on the right day because you know that's not going to work out well for you in the end. So let's see what James has to say. Rather than submitting to a superior foe, as what submission might mean, or surrendering to that foe, James uses a choice of words here that has more of a connotation of enlistment. This word, when he says, therefore, based on the worldliness and what it does and what it creates, submit yourselves to God, often in James's terminology here, has the implication for us that we decide that we're going to switch teams and work under the banner of Jesus Christ rather than against it. Let me give you a couple of examples of that. Think if you will, about a pro football player. Let's take Ezekiel Elliott, who for years I've called 2-yard Zeke. You realize, if you're a Cowboys fan, that Ezekiel Elliott used to play for the Dallas Cowboys. And for a couple of years, he was super effective. That kind of tailed off for a while, and so finally the Dallas Cowboys invited him not to play there anymore. And so he signed with a different team. So instead of wearing the helmet that was silver with a blue star on it, now Ezekiel Elliott has enlisted with a different organization, and his banner is different. It's a different uniform. It's a helmet that is the one that the Patriots wears. A total change of team. That's this word. We might go back into history, 11th, 12th century, for the kingdom of Jerusalem, the church of Jerusalem, that was the focal point between Muslim forces and the Crusaders. And the Crusaders came in with a banner. We know it as a Jerusalem cross or the Crusaders cross. It's a, if you just imagine, a plus sign with four plus signs, smaller plus signs in each of the quadrants of that. You've seen it all over the place. You've seen some of them here at the church. Carrie has one in her office. I have one in my office. The Jerusalem cross was actually a banner that was put onto many of the shields for those Crusaders fighting against the Muslims who were seeking to take over Jerusalem. Flying a different banner, fighting under a different banner. That's the picture here. So what he is saying to us in no uncertain terms is one of the primary tactics, I'm going to say the primary because of the way he writes this, so that's why we take one today. If you don't start with submitting and re-enlisting, if you will, in the army of Jesus Christ, you're not likely to get to that kind of life Jesus was offering over in John chapter 10. I think it's an important thing because there is built into this an understanding and an expectation of conflict. James has just spent significant space talking about conflict that occurs inside the church where it should never occur. And he doesn't say, just be peaceful. He says, change teams, if you will. Change armies. Enlist into the army of God. Let me give you a contrast to that. If you drive, I don't know about driving south. I've not gone that far into Mexico from here, but I've been every other direction you can go. Which is not very many because we're right here on the edge, right? But so if you go north to Las Cruces, or if you go towards Sierra Blanca and Van Horn, pretty much anywhere you go, you're going to find that there are these fields where you can drive by every day and you can see a bunch of cows at work. They're dairies, I think. But when I say cows at work, that's a little bit of a confusing statement, right? Because mostly what you're going to see is a bunch of cows just standing out in the field. That's what they do. You ever seen anybody try to ride a cow out on one of those dairy farms like that? I've not seen that. I've seen cows, you know, posture and maneuver to get in certain places if there's just a little bit of shade. Sometimes they'll move a little bit, but most of the time those cows are just kind of standing around. Not much action in the cow universe, I think. I would suggest to you that one of the greatest tragedies in 21st century American Christianity is that a bunch of Christian people have adopted that model for the Christian life. I got the title. I got the fire insurance that's going to keep me out of hell. But for the most part of my Christian life, I think I'm just going to stand around. Not a whole lot of engagement of the enemy there. Not a whole lot of engagement even with themselves to move forward and further and develop as Christian people. Cows in a pasture are not too exciting. Christians who approach life the same way are not too effective. And they just don't quite get to what Jesus offers us. So is that approach to Christianity just kind of, okay, so I wear the title, I get the retirement plan, but in the meantime, I'm just going to hang out. Is that the kind of living Jesus is talking about in John chapter 10, verse 10? Do we think, you know, sometimes we can convince ourselves that there are throwaway verses in the Bible. Like, yeah, you know, Jesus said that, but he was just making a point. He didn't really mean that he offers that kind of life. Yes, he did. So James now taps into this. He has talked against fighting in the church, and he's zeroed in on the reason there is fighting in the church, and that's this sinful self-elevation kind of me against you and my kingdom against your kingdom and those kind of things. But James is bringing us right now to the tactical part of Christian living that says if you really want what Jesus Christ has to offer you while you're waiting for your retirement plan to kick in, submit yourself to him. Fly under his banner with all that comes with that. So I would encourage you not to settle for being a Christian who just kind of hangs out and plays out the hand, so to speak, until Jesus comes back or he takes us home. Because whether you choose to fight the battles or not, the battles will come to you. Many of us in this room today fully understand that. Don't practice passive Christianity. Never settle. Never settle for passive Christianity. So he helps us understand what this looks like in these next nine imperatives. He says, resist the devil. We'll get to that maybe next week. But that's work. That is work to resist the devil. I had a friend one time. I really kind of wanted to smack him because he tagged me. But he said, you know, if you haven't met the devil face to face today, it may be because you're walking the same way he's walking. See, you want to smack somebody for that, don't you? So he's going to get to some of those things that flesh out what this submit looks like. But before we go there, I just want to take a few minutes today and hit a couple of these application points for that. I borrow largely from Dallas Willard in his incredible, challenging book called The Renovation of the Heart. And he gets to this idea that the surrender that we make, the submission to God, has to be on multiple levels of who we are, because we are put together in not just a single way. Created in God's image carries some nuances with it for us in major systems. So let me just hit one of those first. First of all, there is that emotional part of us. So when we talk about our feelings, we talk about this submitting to God. What does that look like when it comes to our emotional life? I think I have to be careful here, because I know that emotions are baked into the human condition. It's part of how God makes us. So if you're one of those people who just feels everything, then that might be okay, because that's part of how God made you. I'm fascinated, based on some counseling classes that I took back when I was in seminary, our professor told us, I want you to listen very carefully when you're doing counseling with people and listen to what they say, because often they will say things that reveal to you part of what's going on with them. And so he used this as an example. If somebody sits with you and they've got all these problems and they keep saying, well, I think this is a problem and I think I might do that and I think over here, then he says that person is operating from a point of intellectual engagement. I think. But if they say to you, I feel like the world's out to get me. I feel like my spouse is not being fair. He said, that person is revealing to you that they operate from an emotional base. And he said, you're not going to be able to get through with those people unless you meet them where they are and take them where they need to go. Okay, some of you now I know are sitting there going, so what do I say all the time? I'm fascinated with the modern culture that we're in because more and more that has gone to I feel and things that clearly should be stated, I think. But then again, the world in which we are living today seems to be overly invested in emotions. So we have people, as I saw in a video, news video within the last couple of weeks, someone is filming one of these mob theft operations at some kind of a major store. And the person filming it is cackling, does that make sense? With just uncontrolled glee as she watches these people break in and steal things from this department store. Our world has gone to seed on emotions. And I say it, I hope, in that way to help us maybe not be quite so defensive when it comes to how we look at how we do life as a follower of Jesus Christ. I can assure you this, that when he's talking here about submitting, surrendering to God in your life, that means that your emotions have to be submitted and surrendered also. In other words, if you're whole approach to God is tied to your emotional feel-goodism, you're in for some trouble. Because emotions, as my son wisely said in one of his sermons back in July, emotions make great servants, but they make terrible masters. You can't just feed your emotions and expect to grow spiritually. I think that's important because so much of what I call event-driven churchianity, essentially says we're going to create the foundations, we're going to create the atmosphere so that people will feel good about God. Let me take you back a couple of decades, okay, more than a couple of decades, when I was a youth minister. Because back in those days when we would go to camp, I don't know how it is these days. I suspect they're still the same way, maybe even a little bit more pronounced. I don't know. But back in those days when I was a youth minister, one of the things we had to watch out for with teenagers was that they would have this spiritual high at camp. By the way, spiritual highs, always emotional. Always emotional. And so they have this spiritual high at camp, and then they would come home from camp and then have, okay, and I'm not trying to be crass or anything, they would have a hellish crash of their emotions because they can't sustain what youth camp does for them. Everything's different, different people. Everybody's together. They get good and tired, and so they drop some, you know, all that stuff. And so we analyzed that, and as we were, me and some other guys were running a youth camp for a while, we looked at those kind of things and essentially tried to answer the question, how do we keep this level with an incline that represents spiritual growth, not emotional investment? Because too many times we had seen kids who would go off to camp and have this great experience and then come home to a family that had not been to camp and everything was the same, and it would cause them to drop to the depths emotionally. Be careful in this submitting that you're submitting the things that may well be holding you back from good, solid spiritual growth. And your emotions may well be that. Dallas Willard himself said, the area of feeling is, I suspect, the most likely place of defeat for those who sincerely are seeking to follow Christ today. That is a huge statement. Let me use a dog. Can't go too many weeks without a dog example, right? So Teresa used to have this dog that was, she was a rescue dog before we knew what rescue dogs were. This little dog was the size of a loaf of bread. She probably had six teeth. Those were summer teeth. You know what summer teeth are? Some are here and some are here. This poor dog. And she was on the run. Other dogs in the neighborhood were chasing her, and she found herself in our backyard, and Teresa couldn't find the owner, so she became our dog. Don't drop your dogs at my house, by the way. But Pixie was her name. I did not name her. Pixie took to me like immediately. And so she was like always there. Well, then somewhere a couple of days into it, she discovered Teresa. I tell you here, it's true here. Maybe you'll put up with me for a while. You'll love my wife. Well, that dog loved my wife, and she wouldn't have anything to do with me anymore. But you know what moved Teresa off of the throne of that dog's life? We bought her a bed, and then she just wanted the bed all the time because she wanted to feel good. Don't let emotions run your Christianity. But in that, understand that they come from God. They're part of how He made us. And so we surrender them to Him. I don't have time to go much further. I do want to throw this in because it's a bit of a transition for me. The next part of how we're put together that we need to make sure is part of what we surrender to God is that volitional part of who we are. That's our will. This is a dangerous part of Christianity. It's like emotions. If it's properly used, it enhances a whole Christian life and moves us forward. But if it's not used correctly, then it becomes something that cripples us and paralyzes us in growth and development. Volition, that I will get this done. All of us, I guess, most of us, for sure, are very much aware of the events in Israel yesterday and today and whatever comes. For those of you who don't know, a group of about 40 plus of us are planning to go to Israel in about 4 weeks. And so I was watching pretty closely yesterday about what's happening there. If you're one of those people, we'll decide within 2 weeks what we do with that, and we're looking at what options are and keeping an eye on that. So as of now, nothing's changed. We're just being really cautious and watching, and within 2 weeks, we'll make a decision about that. But we welcome your input. But this morning, I was watching some of the news pretty early this morning, and they had a guy on there who I think he said he is the Israeli ambassador to the UN. This guy's deep waters. I'll tell you, I was impressed with how he handled some of the questions that were given to him. But one of the things that just came leaping off of the screen was his resolute will that says, we will win this war. I mean, he didn't even allow for the possibility that it might be a struggle. That's this word. That's part of what we face, because we can get so resolute with God, even in doing the right things, that we become humanistic Christians. We take it upon ourselves to fight the battle. I will get up and I'll pray for an hour every day. I will read through the Bible this week. However we do that, okay, just be careful. You have to surrender that part of you too. Any good thing pushed beyond its logical conclusion becomes a dangerous thing. And in the Christian life, submitting to God positions us for the kind of life that Jesus offers, but we have to watch ourselves throughout. So let me close with this. My goal in this message has been to challenge you and move you, or at least help you come to a commitment to move to the next level in your Christian life, whatever that is. In a crowd like this, we have people on all levels of Christian growth and development. It does not matter where you are in that. You can make a choice to go to the next level. But in order to get there, you have a fresh round of submitting. So my goal then, evaluate. Use this week to evaluate where you are with God and then make the commitment that says, I'm going to submit where I have to submit. And then I'm going to find out where I am not submitting and submit there too. Let's pray. So Father, as we come to an invitation time for this, every one of us has a message in here somewhere. For those who have never had that initial submission that says, I need Jesus Christ in my life. I need that relationship. It's broken by sin. Life is not what it needs to be for me. And so, Father, for those who need Jesus in a saving way, I pray right now your Spirit would work in them. Move them to take the step to say, I'll put my trust in Jesus. I bow my knee to him as Lord, King of Kings, Savior in my life. Every one of us who's already done that, Father, has the opportunity for growth in other areas today. Your Spirit knows those and knows how to get to us with those. So I pray that you would have freedom right now to help us see we need to grow there and submit to you. In Jesus' name, amen. Invitation time, if I can be of help to you, if I can counsel with you, pray with you, that's what this time is for. If you need to make a decision of some kind, now's the time. Let's stand and sing.
Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. See on the portals, he's waiting and watching, watching for you.